The Affordable Care Act has made coverage more available and affordable for many Americans through subsidized insurance and an expansion of Medicaid in states opting to do so, California among them. While several million Californians still don't have health insurance, new law going into effect is set to change that, at least for many children who will soon find themselves insured. In 2012, Governor Brown signed Senate Bill 75 into law, expanding full-scope Medi-Cal eligibility to children in California who are under the age of 19 years, regardless of their immigration status. The new law is anticipated to go into effect sometime later this month and is expected to go a long way to fill the gaps in existing coverage. In today's show, we'll discuss what the potential benefits and challenges will be for expanding coverage, how the community providers will work together to remove barriers to enrollment, and answer other questions related to affordable care. My guests today are Dr. Penny Borenstein, San Luis Obispo Health Officer and Public Health Department Director, Joel Derringer, local health consultant and advocate and co-founder of the Children's Health Initiative in San Luis Obispo County. And joining us by telephone is Tara L. Dooley, manager of the Children's Health Initiative of Santa Barbara County and administrator of Healthy Kids in Santa Barbara insurance product that will be here in just a moment. And I'm going to... Tara, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, great. You are there. Wasn't sure I had you clicked in. Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome to all of you, actually.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I think probably the first place I want to go, if you don't mind, Joel, if you and anybody else who wants to jump in, is kind of give a rundown of an overview of since Affordable Care Act went into effect, how it's working. Did it do what you anticipated, and any surprises, good, bad, indifferent?
Well, the Affordable Care Act was a first start. It took us one step further to people getting affordable health care in this country. Right here on the Central Coast, we've had a fair amount of success in actually adding the number of people who have insurance. SenCal Health, which is our Medicaid plan in Santa Barbara and in San Luis Obispo counties, actually added 40,000 new members as a result of the Affordable Care Act. These were people who were not previously eligible for Medi-Cal that became eligible because of the Affordable Care Act. In addition to that, throughout the Central Coast region, including Monterey, we've seen another 40,000 people enroll in Covered California. That's the state health benefit exchange that provides coverage, often with subsidies. About 90% of the people in those plans actually get subsidized premiums. That said, we still have some issues to face. First, there's the issue of sufficient providers to actually provide services, something that plagues us not only in the Medi-Cal side, but on the private side. And the second thing is affordability. We're still very much an insurance-based system. A lot of the new plans have very high deductibles. So they'll cover, well, they'll either cover front-end preventive services or sort of in the back end, some very expensive services. But often people are on the hook for several thousand dollars of out-of-pocket costs before the coverage, the insurance, kicks in.
And was the enrollment what was anticipated here in California? Did it hit the numbers that you...
Hit? I think it far
it
exceeded.
Actually exceeded. Yeah, I think our Department of Social Services in the county would tell you that they were given a target that they quickly realized was going to be exceeded, and they had to ask for additional assistance from the state to staff up to meet that increased demand.
And Tara, that was the same in Santa Barbara County as well?
Yes, absolutely. SenCal Health actually hired consultants to make an estimate, and it was about three times the amount of enrollees that they had been forecasted to get.
And some of that, I might add, was also what was called woodwork effect. So some of the additional Medi-Cal enrollees were people who were previously eligible, and didn't know it, and had, and their families, mostly for children, but for some adults, didn't actually go through the process of enrolling. So some of them were sort of pulled in by all the advertising about you must have insurance now under this new healthcare system.
So if, you know, with that, and that was before the expansion that we're talking about coming up now, correct?
Right. This started in 2014.
Right. Okay. And then, Joel, can you please give a little bit of a history about the SB 75 that we're going to be talking about today, the expansion for more children, and how that came about?
Yeah, there's been an effort for probably 15 years to try and get all children to have health coverage, whether or not they're legal residents, no matter how or when their parents brought them here or whether they were born here. It just made a lot of sense that we need healthy kids. They're all in school together. They're all going to be here. And we've been trying to get health coverage for many years. There was a series of efforts. It started as local efforts here in San Luis Obispo and also in Santa Barbara counties. And they were bipartisan efforts to cover all kids. In Santa Barbara County, it was two supervisors, Salud Carbajal and Joe Centeno, who were sort of at opposite political spectrums and opposite places in the county, who came together to work on a children's health initiative in Santa Barbara, the one that Tara now heads. In San Luis Obispo, we had a lot of support from Cacho Ashajan, who's now our assembly member, who was on the Board of Supervisors then, and he was chair of the Children's Health Initiative. So we brought together a lot of funding from the First Five Commission, the county boards of supervisors, foundations like the California Endowment, to help fund products and services for kids. And that was 10 years ago, perhaps.
Even before there was discussion about Affordable Care Act or expanding Medicaid through that.
There was a lot of discussion. Yeah. There wasn't a lot of movement.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
Flash forward. Last year, the legislature agreed and the governor signed SB 75, which extends Medi-Cal coverage to all children regardless of their immigration status. They still need to be eligible based on their income and where they live, but they basically removed any immigration status requirement.
So, you know, I think the first thing that would come to mind for anybody that would have any opposition to it, the elephant in the room, would be why would we want to extend coverage to individuals who are here with and who are not citizens of the country when there are citizens of the country that wouldn't be covered?
Right. So I think, as Joel mentioned, it really, especially for children, has largely been a nonpartisan issue. And that is because, first of all, children don't make their own choices about where they're going to live, especially young children. They are the most vulnerable about acquiring certain diseases, particularly those that can be prevented through vaccinations. So it's a good strategy to take care of our children and make sure that they get health care so that they can stay in school. The schools get attendance payment. There's a whole variety of reasons, both fiscal, even if you're just looking at the fiscal issues as opposed to the moral argument of, well, we should take care of our children. So, I think just in general, children sort of we come at healthcare on behalf of children from a slightly different perspective than for the adults.
Go ahead, Tara.
Well, I was going to say another point I would bring up is that people tend to delay care if they do not have access to affordable health care. Mm-hmm. And even though there's public health clinics in our county, it's not free. And or if you go to the emergency room of the hospital, you still end up with a bill and you have to pay it. What we found in our parent survey is that 40% of our parents, before they have health insurance for their kids, they will actually delay seeking treatment for their children, even if they think they need it, because they can't afford it because they're not insured. Mm-hmm. And this can lead to more expensive health care down the line, because if there is no preventive visits or even sick child visit and that condition is allowed to get worse, sometimes it necessitates more expensive care. So that's another part of the public health and the fiscal responsibility aspect of it all.
Well, and you mentioned, too, at the onset, too, Joel, that just the fact that these children are integrated into the school system.
Right.
With all children, you're talking about a health issue for everyone with infections or with illnesses that are going to expand anywhere.
That's right. So, there's good public health reasons.
Right.
There's good, as Dr. Bornstein said, in a way, moral reasons. And it makes a lot of financial sense, because if we can prevent a lot of these diseases, keep kids out of the emergency room, mm-hmm. we're going to save mm-hmm. a lot of money by mm-hmm. providing primary and preventive care.
So what does SB 75 do?
So what it did was expand Medi-Cal to allow all children, regardless of immigration status, to become eligible. And the way the legislation was written, it could start no sooner than May 1st.
Okay.
So this is actually the week that the State Department of Healthcare Services is implementing SB 75. So what they're doing is taking all kids. Many kids were on restricted scope Medi-Cal.
And what was that? Because I've heard that term.
Yeah, that's Medi-Cal that only covers emergency services that did not have immigration restrictions on it. So there are in San Luis, there were, I think, 627 children who were on it, who are currently on it. In Santa Barbara,
we're up to 2,300.
2,300. Wow. Okay. Thank you, Tara. I couldn't find the number fast enough. And we also have several thousand in Monterey County. So these are kids who this week, assuming the computer system works, will be transferred onto full scope Medi-Cal.
And actually, it is working.
Okay,
and it
great.
Is working. The latest information is that from the Department of Social Services is that the transition is happening.
Oh, okay. And
yes.
What is that transition? Is it just a transition in the computer, or
basically?
Okay.
It's communicating the one computer system to another computer system about all these children that already have Medi-Cal numbers and are being transitioned from one Medi-Cal aid code, which is the restricted scope, which, as Joel was pointing out, it's, for example, so if a child breaks his leg, it would cover going to the emergency room and getting the leg set, but it would not cover for any follow-up visits with the orthopedist, for example, to get the cast off.
Okay.
And then it's transitioning into full-scope Medi-Cal, which is a comprehensive medical insurance. So there's a health plan, there's medical services, there's dental services, there's vision services, there's behavioral health services as well.
Okay. Okay.
So in addition, so I figure about half the eligible children are already in the system mm-hmm. and will have been transferred to full scope Medi-Cal. And as Tara said, that includes dental. It includes mental health services. Those kids are in and on. The other half need to apply for eligibility for Medi-Cal through the County Department of Social Services. And that's the same process that they would have gone through for emergency or restricted scope Medi-Cal, but it's through the local Department of Social Services.
Okay. I'm going to take a real quick break, and then I want to come back and talk about the eligibility and what that means, because you've used that term, but I'm not sure that we understand that. If you just joined us, you're listening to Central Coast Voices here on KCBX Public Radio Station. In fact, KCBX was once again voted your best radio station in the most recent New Times Readers poll. Thank you for that. If you, I have with me today Dr. Penny Bornstein, who's the San Luis Obispo County Health Officer and Public Health Department Director. We are talking about new legislation expanding Medi-Cal insurance coverage to all children from income-eligible families, regardless of immigration status. Also with us is Joel Derringer, local health consultant and advocate and co-founder of the Children's Health Initiative of San Luis Obispo County. And joining us by phone today is Tara Dooley, manager of Children's Health Initiative of Santa Barbara County and administrator of Healthy Kids Santa Barbara insurance product. If you have a question or comment about today's topic, I invite you to join us in our discussion. All you need to do is call us at 805-781-3875. Again, 781-3875. We'd love to hear from you. And so eligibility, what is that? Who can access?
So to be eligible for Medi-Cal for children,
yes,
you need to be under what's now about 250% of the federal poverty level. And I'll give you the numbers.
Yeah, that would be great.
Entails, right? We talk in percents. It's actually 266% due to some disregards. But it basically, for a family of three, so that might be a single parent and two children or two parents and one child, it's about $50,000 a year annual
total
income.
Annual income,
right.
Okay.
So that's 2.5 times the federal poverty level would make them eligible for Medi-Cal. They also need to be physically present, a resident of the county in which they're applying. And they need to be, well, for this coverage, for the undocumented kids, it's under age 19.
Okay.
For general Medi-Cal, well, it covers adults, but to be eligible at the kids level, the 250%, it's under 21 for regular Medi-Cal. This one is somewhat lower, under age 19.
Based on that income level for a three-person family, that actually is a lot of eligible people in this county.
Yeah, as Joel had mentioned, we think that the 600-some-odd that are on restricted scope Medi-Cal is about half of the newly eligible population. So we may have 1,000, 1,500 kids that are now going to be able to get this full scope Medi-Cal. Some of them will transition in today or yesterday. That people are listening to this kind of show. And we've been doing a lot of outreach in places that we might find these families. Some of our public health programs already didn't have residency or immigration requirements. So our WIC clinics, family planning clinics, for our general communicable disease responses, we frequently interact with folks. We have a number of places that we are already engaging with families who might qualify.
You're really doing a lot of outreach.
Yeah, we've been trying to get the message out.
Tara, with that, it would indicate that there are some challenges to get people to come forward on some of this product. What are the challenges?
For It's very interesting. There's a lot of fear from immigrant families as to giving their information and that they may be targeted for immigration services to come and take them away and deport them if they reveal information. So we assure them that all this information is confidential and will not be shared with immigration services. With our Healthy Kids insurance product, we've had really good luck with those families, and we have more than two-thirds of them are already enrolled in restricted scope, and we're doing outreach to the remaining third to get them enrolled in restricted scope. And just in general, just for your information, in Santa Barbara County, 50% of all children in Santa Barbara County are on Medi-Cal even
now.
Oh,
my goodness.
The number's not quite as high here, but to put it in some perspective, over 50,000 county residents in San Luis Obispo are already on Medi-Cal and members in the SenCal health plan. So this is not an insignificant program.
No, not at all.
And the converse is the addition to it is actually a small but very important piece.
Right, right. So then with that, it really brings up the issue of access for provider access. How's that going?
We're both trying to find an answer to that question ongoing. It's a challenge. It was a challenge before the Affordable Care Act. It will be a challenge after we add this new cadre of eligible children. And it is more difficult in some areas than others, but both in terms of basic care, primary care, general care, as well as specialty care. We tend in this county to not have enough doctors. The number has increased dramatically since January 2014 in response to the doubling of our Medi-Cal enrollment. Mm-hmm. But we still are not quite keeping pace. So I get called all the time from friends, from colleagues, from strangers, help me find a physician.
So, and I'm going to ask you this for your county too, Tara, in just a minute, but Penny, for this county, for San Luis County, with the increase of people who have Medi-Cal, has there been an increase of providers who take Medi-Cal?
Not really. No, if anything, over the last few years, I think we've gone the other way,
it's
particularly with children. We have one very robust and geographically widespread provider, Community Health Centers of the Central Coast. Mm-hmm. They are the main, by far, provider of care for almost exclusively for adults for primary care who have Medi-Cal. For children, they are also the primary provider, though we do have still some private pediatricians, but some over the decade that has just passed have been dropping out. So if anything, we're going in the wrong direction. It's even worse when we talk about dental,
or
possibly also mental health. But dental, when the state merged what was previously called the Children's Health Insurance Program, this is a few years ago, Healthy Families became part of Medi-Cal. We saw a number of dentists that had been accepting the Healthy Families insurance that did not sign on for Medi-Cal, Dentical, it's called in the dental world. So we've seen the perfect storm of more children now with access, meaning they have insurance, mm-hmm. But fewer providers who are taking them. So wait times are longer. There are two safety net providers, Telosa Children's Dental Program and CHC being the other major safety net dental provider, are chugging along, seeing as many kids as they can. But it is a worsening situation in this county.
And what about in Santa Barbara County, Tara?
Well, SunCal Health is the provider, medical provider, and the health plan for both Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo counties. And they, as you may know, they were the first managed care Medi-Cal plan in the country, I believe, as well as in the state. And they've made a significant effort to work with their provider network. They're very aware of this issue, and they're working various strategies to try to engage and retain their Medi-Cal providers. Something I heard today actually is that they asked for a special dispensation from the state to become the provider payment people for the CHDP services. Because if you're a Medi-Cal provider, you have to also provide child health disability prevention services as well. And many physicians refuse to do so because they had to deal with state reimbursement. So they're hoping that this is going to remove one of the barriers for providers, and they're doing outreach to their current providers and trying to engage new ones since they will no longer have to work with the state to be reimbursed for these services.
Did you see the same thing happen in Santa Barbara that Penny talked about here in San Luis Obispo, of a decline in providers?
I haven't. There are some that are coming up to retire in northern Santa Barbara County that we're all concerned about. Pediatrics is the issue, primarily. But again, dental is the even bigger issue. There can be months of waiting for a child, even if they're having in pain, to get services for dental treatment. And so we have a really robust dental health access team and an oral health program manager through the county education office, and so she can advocate for clients to get them in faster. We maintain a list of all the dental providers that do accept DentiCal, and because it's hard sometimes just for someone who has DentiCal to know where to go. So we maintain a list and furnish that information widely as to when they're, you know, what kind of what their target population is as far as the dentist, who will they see, do they do sedation? That's the primary issue for young children is finding providers that will not only treat them, but if they have severe decay, and we have a lot of severe children with severe decay in Santa Barbara County, not so much in San Luis Obispo County because you have fluoridation, thank goodness. But Santa Barbara County, we have a higher rate of oral of caries than for children than other than even the state average or the national average, and these children often have to be sedated to get care, and that's very difficult. But we try to get around it by having this network and really working on it as a community to identify the providers that do furnish Medi-Cal dental services.
Just as a point of correction, Tara, this is Penny. So in our county, in terms of fluoridation, it is only available in San Luis Obispo City.
Oh, okay.
And that accounts for about 15% of our total population. They're actually, the age distribution is even such that there are fewer kids in the city versus the rest of the county. So we're not far behind you with that glorious statistic of not having what children need in terms of oral health safety and fluoridation.
Sorry to hear that.
Well, yeah. One of the complaints, too, is that the difficulty in accessing specialists, that they're so far and few between that families frequently are having to travel long distances to get to specialists, even if they can get in, because there may not be a specialist for, say, a pediatric neurologist. Hardship on families that are low income, obviously, for travel.
Well, it's not only low income families who have specialty access issues.
Well, it's also anybody on Medi-Cal, right?
No, I'm saying, they're all low. No,
anybody.
I mean anyone with anything.
Yeah.
Whether
for
you're
specialists
private pay,
here, yeah.
Right.
Do you have the same deficit in specialists in Santa Barbara County?
Yes, and I was, and I'm glad you said that, Joel, because I myself, when I was looking for a specialist in a particular arena at one point, was told I could not see someone for like 6 months to a year. So it's mm-hmm. it's across the board, and I think yes, I do with high cost of living here. I'm not sure.
You know, it's not unique to our region. I do a lot of work in the San Joaquin Valley, where there's probably half the ratio of specialists to population. But I was talking to someone yesterday from the Bay Area who runs a community clinic there, and even she was going on about lack of providers. So it's actually statewide and national. There's a lot of things to be done about that, but lest we diverge.
Yeah. What is covered now with SenCal, with Medicaid, with, you had mentioned dental health, all of their shots, all of the...
Go ahead,
yeah,
Penny.
I was going to say, so there's 10 essential benefits mm-hmm. that must now, by virtue of the Affordable Care Act, be a part of any insurance plan. It applies to nationally Medicaid. It applies to private insurers who sell on the marketplace privately or through a health benefits exchange. I'm sure I'm not going to remember all 10, but it's everything from primary care to emergency room to pharmacy to dental for children only. Behavioral health services, so substance use disorders, mental health, and transportation to the hospital, like emergency vehicles, and vision.
Okay.
So I probably came up with close to 10. Some of those services are required to be provided at no cost. So immunizations, if they are recommended by the national immunization body, certain screening tests like colonoscopies, mammograms, pap smears, based on the United States Preventive Services Task Force recommendations of who and at what ages should get certain screening services. Those are also available through your health plan at no cost.
What about blood work? Should a physician order blood work?
The laboratory is also one of the covered. Essential benefits, yes.
Okay. You are listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your public radio station, at 90.1 San Luis Obispo, 91.7 Salinas to Paso Robles, and 89.5 Santa Barbara, and around the world at www.kcbx.org. A reminder that KCBX's annual Live Oak Festival is coming up, and we still need volunteers to make it as great an event as always is. We have positions available from dishwashers to shuttle drivers and everything in between. Live Oak volunteers trade work for full festival tickets. You can sign up by going on to liveoakfest.org and clicking on the Volunteers tab under the Contact Us tab. Now back to the show and my guests. We're talking about healthcare coverage for all Californians and filling in the gaps. My studio guests are Dr. Penny Borenstein and Joel Derringer. And with us joined by phone is Tara Dooley from Santa Barbara. You're invited to join us in our discussion, also by calling us. And you can do that by calling 805-781-3875. Again, 805-781-3875. I mentioned at the top of the hour that there are still Californians who are not covered by insurances. With the options that are out there, why not?
Well, there are several options. There are several million Californians who still do not have coverage.
Right.
Probably about half of them are eligible for some coverage, mm-hmm. whether it's Medi-Cal coverage and they haven't signed up, or private coverage through the exchange, through Covered California, for which they could receive subsidies. For some of those, it's a matter of not knowing, not wanting, not caring.
Not thinking they need it.
Right. Okay. You know, say, well, you know, I don't get sick. Why should I pay for insurance? For some, it's actually an affordability question. Even with the subsidies that are provided, as I said, they're subsidized for premiums. They're not always subsidized for deductibles or their copays. So it really is still, we're at the edge of affordability. I mean, for people with medical needs that previously couldn't get insurance, it's a great thing. But probably about half of the remaining uninsured are eligible, but have not done it, either by choice or because of affordability. The other half in California are not eligible for any of these benefits, mostly because of their immigration status.
Okay.
They may have lived here many years. They may have citizen children. They're probably all working because that's who's cleaning our houses, cooking our food, and growing our food. But they're not eligible as adults for Medi-Cal, and they're not eligible to even buy for full price. They can't buy insurance in Covered California. So there are several efforts to change that. The reason we now have children's coverage for all people was actually sort of Plan B from the whole Health for All campaign, which was trying to expand coverage to everyone who's living in California for a lot of the same reasons that, you know, we want healthy people within our community.
Sure.
The legislature would have covered everyone. The governor was willing to go so far in the beginning as to cover the kids last year. There's still a big push led by Senator Ricardo Lara from Los Angeles to cover everyone in California.
And that's still in the works?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's still one of the top priorities among the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
Balanced again. It's mostly a budget issue.
Yeah.
I would think it's not even in California that much of a political issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're somewhat different here. There's also a push to allow everyone without immigration questions to buy insurance through Covered California. and that would be buying it without subsidies, so they'd be paying actually full price, which is fairly unaffordable for anyone at a lower income. But we haven't even allowed for that in California yet.
Since 2014, do you find that every year new people are signing up that weren't previously? Are you still seeing new people kind of joining in that wave?
Yeah. Well, part of the push for that is what's known as the individual mandate. Remember, under the Affordable Care Act,
if you don't join, there's a tax penalty.
And the penalty increases.
Yeah.
You know, so the penalty, I think, just this past year was $650
a year,
or I think 1.5% of your income. Mm-hmm. So it adds up.
Right.
And people are, it's no longer cheaper to go without insurance and pay the penalty.
Right. Okay. So that's kind of an incentive.
That was the idea.
Yeah. We're going to take a call here from Chris. Chris, are you there?
Yeah, I'm there.
You had a question or comment?
Yeah, I'm a chiropractor for CHC in San Luis Obispo. I just wanted to let you know that, Medi-Cal is covered for all the kids and the pregnant women and for chiropractic services 2 times a month. And I think you guys left that.
That was one on that 10 list, huh?
Well, it's not on the 10 list. It's on the Medi-Cal list.
It's on the Medi-Cal list. Okay. Good to know.
Yeah.
So, do you have a lot of people that come in to use your chiropractic services?
Yeah, it's getting better and better. And as more people know about it, I think a lot of people just don't know about it.
Fantastic.
Yeah, part of it is the legislature cut out a lot of optional services under Medi-Cal a few years ago, and they've slowly been replacing them. It's like adults could not get dental services for several years, which is part of the reason we have a big problem in accessing dentists. For a while, they were trying to fill in with all the kids. Now that adults are eligible again, there's high demand and the same number of providers. And chiropractic was added back. I think there's still a push now to add, I believe podiatry is not covered yet, but there's a push every year, and this is the big legislative budget season, to put back in all these what are so-called optional benefits.
Fantastic. Thank you for calling and reminding. Appreciate it, Chris.
Yeah, I'm at Bishop Street in San Luis Obispo. Everybody's welcome.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Across the street from me.
Well, I think Dr. Bornstein's thinking about coming over there. Thanks, Chris. And we have Joan. Hi, Joan. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi. You had a question or comment?
Yeah, I had a question. Wondering why don't they address the problem first of getting enough Medi-Cal providers before adding possibly another 1,500 people on Medi-Cal? I mean, isn't that just going to, increase the problem that we already have of, trying to get in to see a doctor?
This is Tara. The issue has been, that our local health plan, which manages Medi-Cal services for San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties, contracts with clinics and providers, and they can't add new doctors until they have the demand for it. It's kind of a push and pull thing. So everyone recognizes that they need more providers and maybe they need more space, but until they have the demand for it, they can't afford to go ahead and hire new doctors or do new facilities. So it's been kind of, that's the way it's been explained to me, is that as the demand comes and starts growing, and we didn't see the demand initially when all the initial Affordable Care Act new enrollees came in. It took a while before folks actually started utilizing their insurance. So they've been adjusting as the demand grows.
Has that been the same, Dr. Pornstein, with community health centers?
Yeah, it's very much been reactive.
Yeah.
Not faulting the system, but that is very much the way it goes. They can't increase their rate and increase their capacity until they know what the demand
Till they've got access to band.
Well, and it's not only the demand. There always was the demand. Yeah. It's the ability to pay. So people now have coverage, so an ability to pay for care. So they're probably accessing more necessary care. The other thing with Medi-Cal coverage is it covers things like emergency rooms and hospital stays. So if you have a family that would otherwise have gone bankrupt due to high medical bills, they're now getting coverage. So while it doesn't help in adding providers on the primary side, it certainly helps families in
on the
financial struggle.
Side. Yeah. Joan, did that answer your question at all?
Yeah, sure. Thank you.
Thank you. In mentioning the emergency room services, has there been a visible drop in the utilization of emergency rooms, which was one of the things that was hoped for when more people had coverage?
I'd say in the short term, no.
Okay.
I don't know specifically in our counties. There was a pretty good experiment in Oregon a few years ago where they expanded Medicaid, or what we call Medi-Cal, and they did it by lottery. So they, you know, it wasn't because a new group became eligible. They only had a certain amount of money. They can only pick half the people, let's say. And then they tracked both sets of people. And as it turned out, that the utilization of services, probably all services, including the emergency room, went up, at least in the first year. And that was the last study that was published was based on 1 year. And it makes sense that, you know, these were services that you kept putting off and putting off because you knew you couldn't afford it. When you had coverage, you actually would go get it and realize that, you know, one reason people go to emergency rooms is they call their doctor and they say, well, we're full. Go to the emergency room. It's after five. Go to the emergency room.
Right.
So it's probably the insured people who are far more likely to go to the emergency room than the uninsured people.
Yeah, that's and data bears that out. The impression is usually the emergency room is filled with uninsured poor people. But people who don't have insurance traditionally try to stay away from the expensive health care that you get in the emergency room unless that's your last resort.
That the same experience in Santa Barbara County, Tara?
Well, we found with our Healthy Kids insurance product in our evaluation every year that actually, with along with case management and getting these children into their preventive visits, we've actually had a decrease
over time,
just with our Healthy Kids product. That with the Medi-Cal population, it has. It's like Joel has said. Yes, it's been a higher utilization. One of the strategies that you know, as far as the Affordable Care Act. There's disincentives for, you know, the hospitals and having people utilize the emergency room over and over. So CenCal is working with the hospitals, and the hospitals are developing programs as well to make it they incentivize clinics, for example, CenCal does, so that they have maybe they're open on Saturdays or they have extended hours, trying to give families more options. Also started a nurse call-in line. So if you that's available 24 hours a day. So if you have a question about a health issue and you're not sure whether you need to go to the emergency room or not, or if it's something you can handle on your own, they can call and find out. And a lot of the families have not had insurance before, and so that's why we're really going to be focusing next year on helping families who are newly enrolled and how to utilize their health insurance, how to use preventive visits, which can have been proven to have, if a child, for example, has regular preventive visits, they have one half the sick child visits, so that they know that they can call their doctor's office after hours and talk to someone or call the nurse line, and that there's other options except, you know, not just the emergency room that they have to go to.
Do after-hours clinics or urgent cares help offset that utilization of emergency rooms?
Yeah, I think very much so. I was thinking as I was listening to Tara that something else that is a future change is right now you call 911, whether it's a sore tummy or a life-threatening mm-hmm. heart attack, or, you know, you're bleeding. And right now, if you go through the emergency medical services system, the only place that they can take you is the hospital.
Right.
But we have been working on a pilot basis in the city to look at alternatives, and also the federal legislation is looking at alternatives, where maybe a time will come in not too distant future where that transportation doesn't have to be to the highest cost healthcare provider, being the emergency department.
What would that look like? So that there could be in-field assessment of someone that perhaps there is a need for urgent care, and they could be transported to an urgent care facility or directed to urgent care?
Yeah, and something we were just this morning talking in our emergency medical care committee about the future of reimbursement for ambulances is going to be based on that type of assessment. The Center for Medicaid and Medicare is looking at what they did with hospitals a number of years back, which is change it to value-based reimbursement, so based on your diagnosis. So we may see a time in the not-too-distant future where the ambulance company says, you know, it might be better for you to do this for tonight and call the doctor in the morning, and or you may wind up footing the bill for the ride to the hospital. There's just a lot of seismic changes happening in that universe of the emergency medical care system.
Would that cross all payers?
It stands to reason that it may eventually. The leading edge right now is the federal payer, but I'm sure that third-party payers, private insurers, are keeping their eyes and ears open.
I'd like to go back to something that Tara mentioned, which was really the success or one of the incredible benefits with the Children's Health Initiatives.
Yes.
And that was sort of the case management or the patient navigation of having someone there helping you through the system, providing alternatives, educating you about appropriate care and when to get it and when not to get it. And it's things like SenCal are doing with the Nurse Advice Line 24/7. That you can call them and they will tell you whether or not you need to go. And particularly with newly insured populations who haven't had this benefit before, I mean, it really is very helpful to help guide them through the incredibly complex medical system. So, you know, Tara, you know, the study I was talking about in Oregon was a one-year study. Tara's been tracking this probably 7 or 8 years and has, in fact, seen a drop in high-end utilization and an increase in preventive services.
You know, we take it so for granted how to navigate the insurance system, but it really is a complicated system here. We had a gentleman come in the other day, and with a covered California plan that covered his, he had a primary care physician, but it did not cover the lab tests that he wanted to have at one of the clinics, and they were not a provider under the plan. And he didn't even know that you could just call the number in the back of his card to find out what providers would provide those services under his health plan. So it's very simple things, even that just to start, because if you've never had insurance before, you know, you just don't know.
I've got to be really honest. It's not even people who haven't had insurance before. I think it's people who do have insurance that the insurance has changed so much frequently with what is or isn't as they move about the system that sometimes they don't know how to access or who to access to ask.
Or that they have a choice in how much it costs them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And what you're talking about, you know, when you were talking about being able to dial in, I'm reminded of a very old, early Kaiser model. I came from the Bay Area and had a Kaiser in the early 70s. And that concept of calling in and being screened for what they called short appointments, they would direct. And I had a new baby at that time, and they would direct. This is something that can wait till clinic in the morning. This is something that you probably probably advisable to bring the baby in for emergency room. We have a clinic. You can bring the baby into clinic. But it was incredibly settling for someone who really didn't have a clue what to do. It's great that you're doing that. Is that something that they're going to be implementing, something similar in this county, Penny?
Well, SenCal does already provide that service. Most providers have a 24/7 answering service at a minimum to try to, you know, get some level of triage. But I think increasingly health insurers are realizing that they can actually save money by trying to divert people from the emergency room by having a ask a nurse type of service.
Yeah. Even if it was, and we have a call from Judy here. Judy.
Hello.
Hi. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I do. I wanted to comment on the California care when you get the subsidized. My husband is a teacher, and he was pink slipped. We moved down to San Luis Obispo County in 2013, and then he did receive some unemployment insurance until it was no longer, it was not extended any longer. And so finally, because he couldn't find work at local schools, he got a job at Home Depot and worked there part-time. At $10 an hour after being a school teacher for 16 years. Anyway, to make a long story short, we did get the California subsidized insurance, and then halfway through the year, he was hired as a teacher, and when our taxes were due, we had to pay $3,900 back to the state, and we were not aware of that, but that was a possibility. So when I talked to our tax person, they said a lot of people got hit with that and didn't realize it. So I don't know what the status is now, but, boy, that's something that's pretty scary. It's a lot of money, and you can't save for it because you don't know whether or not you're going to get a job during
right.
that year.
It's really a shame. Yeah. People didn't understand the system, and the system wasn't set up well to let you know.
Right.
But your subsidies are based on what you project your income to be. And if you don't change that projection, you know, and they don't necessarily tell you or make it easy to tell them what your updated income is, they will continue with the subsidies. And then at the end of the year, through your tax form, you sort of synchronize it all.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's really bad news.
Yeah, yeah. And the problem, we went through a health insurance agent, too, and when we spoke with her, she said that a lot of people were blindsided on that, and they were not actually real clear on that themselves. So that, in addition to the fact that we owed the IRS money, we paid almost like $6,000 that year and had really very little income at the beginning of the year as far as being able to save it. So if that's still the case, people really need to pay attention to what their employment status is and what the ramifications of that could be, because you're penalized if you don't get it. So that's
right.
a real tough one.
Right. There are some caps on the amount that you would have to pay back. I suspect your tax person looked at that. There's also sort of an unknown piece, and that's that the IRS cannot take any enforcement action against you for these penalties. Or maybe that's related to the individual mandate. Yeah, it may not be the subsidy one. Sorry.
What would have been helpful is if that could have been something that could have been set up in a payment plan without a penalty. And I don't know if, those in the government, if that's something that can be changed. But instead of having to pay that when the taxes was due, if we could have made a payment plan just on that subsidy, that certainly would have made life a lot easier.
Judy, you said this was what year?
2014.
Yeah,
the first year.
Yeah.
I suspect you're not alone in having gotten that harsh lesson.
Yeah, and that was for
like,
those people that complained,
no
that was
year.
One of the big ones. Yeah.
Well,
glad he's back to teaching,
to
Judy.
To really pay attention to that.
Well, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
So we have just about 4 minutes. I want to wrap up by talking about for the positive impact of kids who've been covered by insurance. You've seen positive results for kids already. What are some of those?
Tara, you have all the data, hands on.
Well, we've seen better school attendance. We've seen families that are no longer, they're more confident on being able to handle their children's health care needs. I sometimes, you know, I'm a parent of two who've grown up now, but when I read that 40% of our parents delay getting care for their children, even when they think they need it because they can't afford it when they were uninsured, it just breaks my heart because I know how difficult that is. Or that we have our utilization data where the children, maybe 60 to 75%, depending on the year, will have seen a doctor, but then after they get insured, 95% have seen a doctor. It's even worse with the dental care. Maybe 50% will have seen a dentist within the previous 6 months, but after they get insurance, 95% will have gone to the dentist. And again, this is, like Joel said, this is with folks urging them to make preventive visits and the people that enroll them helping them to understand that this is a very important thing.
And they're also not only seeing a doctor when there's an urgent or emergent care, but it sounds like they're also following up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They're going for preventive visits. They're getting their regular visits, yearly visits. I mean, that was something that I think it's changing. I think that parents are more aware now. But at the beginning, the culture was, well, I only go take my child to the doctor when they're sick. Why should I do it otherwise? Or these are just baby teeth. You know, they're going to fall out. Why do we need to go to the dentist? You know. So yes, definitely has made a big difference. And it's saved a lot of money at our emergency rooms and our hospitals. And overall, I believe it's fiscally sound and a good public policy.
Well, and going back to the point that we made at the beginning of the show that Joel pointed out is that with children who are healthier, that are attending school, that are doing well, it's also creating other children that are healthier because they're in classes with them, they're playing with them. So it's better for the health of the community overall.
We've done a lot of work over the last 10 years with children with extreme oral health treatment needs. When we were doing screening, I could pick them out, you know, the kids that have it's infection in the child's body. They'll be smaller, they'll have a gray pallor, and you know it's not affecting just that child, but when they're in pain and maybe they can't eat very well. But all these children who care about each other, especially the preschool children, they're all aware of this. The teachers are aware of it. They're distracted by it. So it's having a negative effect on all the children's learning and their ability to concentrate, not just the child that's suffering.
Well, I want to thank all of you for being with me today. Dr. Penny Bornstein, San Luis Obispo County Health Officer and Public Health Department Director, Joel Derringer, local health consultant, advocate, and co-founder of the Children's Health Initiative of San Luis Obispo County, Tara Dooley, manager of Children's Health Initiative Santa Barbara County, administrator of Healthy Kids Santa Barbara Insurance Product, and everyone who called in with their comments and questions. Next week, I'll be talking with Ann Wyatt and Joe Oliver from HomeShare SLO, a program that helps match home providers, that's people with an extra room, with home seekers, people who need a room, as a way to meet current housing challenges and provide affordable housing with existing resources. Central Coast Voices is sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and thank you for joining me on Central Coast Voices.